Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim is rested and back for a slow ramp up back into the news cycle this week after being on a glorious vacation last week. Sorry, Jim, not going to happen. Not even noon today as we record this on Tuesday from a long 4th of July weekend. And already we've got blockbuster news from the director of the FBI. Jim Comey walked out to the microphones and the cameras at about 11 o'clock Eastern time, amped up the drama by saying no one knows what I'm about to say about the status of the investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of the private email server. He went on for about 15 minutes explaining what they were investigating, what they found, and ultimately what they recommended. Here in the good martini is some of the discoveries that they had in this investigation, starting with just how much classified information Hillary Clinton was stashing away on her variety of servers, as it turns out.
110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received. 8 of those chains contained information that was top secret at the time they were sent. 36 of those chains contained secret information at the time, and 8 contained confidential information at the time. That's the lowest level of classification. Separate from those, about 2,000 additional emails were upclassified to make them confidential. Those emails had not been classified at the time that they were sent or received.
And then beyond that, he said Hillary Clinton's excuse that a lot of these things weren't marked classified doesn't matter at all.
Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. For example, 7 email chains concerned matters that were classified at the top secret special access program at the time they were sent and received. Those chains involve Secretary Clinton both sending emails about those matters and receiving emails about those same matters. There is evidence to support a conclusion that any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position or in the position of those with whom she was corresponding about those matters should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
But as we mesh martinis 1 and 2 here, because everybody's probably going to know the outcome by the time you hear this, despite all that background, all that dereliction of duty on the part of Hillary Clinton, ultimately here was the conclusion.
Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. We cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts. All the cases prosecuted involved some combination of clearly intentional and willful mishandling of classified information or vast quantities of information exposed in such a way as to support an inference of intentional misconduct or indications of disloyalty to the United States or efforts to obstruct justice. We do not see those things here.
So, Jim, you're completely slacking your job. You didn't do the right thing to protect this confidential information. Anybody with 2 brain cells to rub together should have known better than this. But we're pretty sure you didn't do it intentionally, so we're not going to charge you with anything here, even though the laws are fairly clear that simply storing classified information in an unauthorized place is against the law.
Leading up to this, a lot of people had said, oh, this is turning about as bad a way it possibly could in terms of undermining public trust of the process. Attorney General Loretta Lynch meeting with Bill Clinton on the plane certainly creates the appearance of impropriety, if not actual impropriety. There was rumors of Hillary Clinton was thinking of keeping Loretta Lynch on board in her presidency. Boy, that doesn't, you know, emit an odor. As long as she doesn't get indicted by Lynch, you know, that might complicate the relationship if they had continued. Then, you know, around mid-morning, all of a sudden news breaks that Comey is making an announcement. and nobody knows what it's about. And all of a sudden you could just feel the murmurs reverberating through Washington and the entire country. Then further news broke out that Lynch, you know, was told about the press conference, was not told what it was about, and that nobody in the Department of Justice or the FBI really knew what this was about. And this, you were talking about, okay, so it was, as people were speculating on Twitter, if he was going to recommend an indictment, he would hold it very close to the vest for about the first 10 minutes of this press conference, Greg. I'm watching this, and everybody else is watching this, and everyone's live tweeting and reacting, and you can just kind of feel the sense of, oh my goodness, he's actually going to recommend an indictment. Because the first 10 minutes of this were just brutal for Hillary Clinton. Like, it's not really in dispute anymore. She violated the law. She violated the law a bunch of times. And everything she had said about, oh, there was no classified information on my system, and I just happened to be sloppy, I did this out of personal convenience, all of that was blown completely out of the water by Comey. Then all of a sudden, he says, in light of all, he builds this mountain of evidence. And he can, you know, he uses terms like extremely careless in the handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. He turns and says, no, we don't think any reasonable prosecutor would indict on this because we can't find precedent. Greg, do you think the reason they can't find any precedent is because we've never had a Secretary of State as shady and corrupt and dishonest and reckless as Hillary Clinton?
Precisely.
Right? I mean, this is like saying, well, we've never found a USC running back who's stabbed two people to death. So we can't find any precedent for this. So we're not going to charge O.J. Simpson. A baffling decision here. And you know, experienced legal folks are looking at this and saying, wait a minute, these two things don't really match. The first 10 minutes of this press conference don't match the second one. And you know what it kind of reminds me of, Greg?
What?
John Roberts' decision in the first Obamacare case.
Yes.
Where he lays out this very extensive case saying, really, there's no evidence the government has this authority. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the government can say, yes, you are required to purchase health insurance. But it kind of looks a little bit like a tax to me. So I think it's fine. It's no problem. And we're going to go ahead with this. I think this shakes people's confidence in it. And it almost would have been better if Comey had come out and said, yeah, we didn't see any major violations of law. Because in this, he said, yeah, here's the extensive evidence of violations of law. But we just don't think there's enough precedent for prosecuting something like this, so we're not going to do this. And, you know, somebody's arguing, look, first of all, I'm sure right now David Petraeus is saying, hello, I'm sorry, I let, you know, my mistress look at some classified stuff, and I lose the CIA job, I'm on probation for 2 years, they throw the book at me, but Hillary Clinton, yeah, we just don't think we get prosecuted. It's mind-boggling. A few moments ago, I saw Larry O'Connor, who's a D.C. area radio host and sometimes on Fox News. And look, this is why reasonable people believe that the system is fixed, that the system is corrupt. And it's very hard to argue with that right now. We live in a world where, you know, Dinesh D'Souza gets chased to the ends of the earth for making illegal donations. But Hillary Clinton, with clear evidence that she has violated the law numerous times with highly classified information, you know, she's like William Ayers, guilty of sin, free as a bird. It is a really bad day for America. It's also my birthday, so thank you, James Comey. and kind of like, if you feel like there's laws that apply to the little people, to quote Leona Helmsley, and laws don't really apply to people like the Clintons, you've got good reason to think that today. And that's a really horrible thing to say about this country. I think anybody who's ever had to pay a parking ticket when they were there for an extra minute, or a speeding ticket for a couple miles over the speed limit, emission stickers, all the times you've ever been punished by the law on what you thought were really ticky-tack, small beer, not major offenses. And you watch somebody like Hillary Clinton get away with something like that, you're convinced you don't really live in a free country anymore. You live in a country that's got an aristocracy with different rules for them than they have for you, and you're mad as hell about this. I don't know if this is going to change the way the presidential election turns out, but it certainly feels like people who've been losing faith in our institutions have good reason to just erode those last remaining shards of faith in light of what we've seen today.
Yes. Basically, Hillary Clinton can't get away with her explanation, but ultimately she's got the Trump card, no pun intended, by saying that I told you that no charges were coming. No charges are coming. And if you want to be even more depressed about the last comment that Jim made, there's an excellent article by Kurt Schlichter at Town Hall yesterday explaining that the rule of law is pretty much dead. The fact that Loretta Lynch didn't get fired for meeting privately with the husband of a woman currently under FBI investigation, the fact that it got swept under the rug, and now what we just witnessed today suggests that the rule of law, which is one of the absolute foundational underpinnings of our free society, there's a lot to be worried about. It's not just this election and what the people on this ballot might be able to get away with as a result of this going forward, but just the fact that an open and shut case like this somehow gets garbled down into no charges whatsoever.
We've had a lot of bad martinis, Greg, but this one's pretty bad. And it's not even for like how it would affect the presidential race. It just is a sense that, you know, because we'd spent a lot of time hearing about what a great, reliable guy Comey was, and how if he felt like the DOJ was going to ignore his recommendations, he would resign in protest. He was a guy who cared about the reputation of the FBI, and he wanted America to, you know, have faith in it. Well, it's very strange that he doesn't see the contradiction between the first 10 minutes of that press conference and the last five. And the idea of, like, you know, apparently, you know, she will not be charged. No one else will be charged. He describes all the ways in which there was a harm and a foul. And now he says, ultimately, legally, we've decided no harm, no foul.
Amazing. Amazing. Intent never mattered under the law, but that's what he pinned it on. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And Jim, even with horrific news like this, at least we've got our residual American pride. We saw it yesterday and we'll see it again in a few weeks. When the world comes together at the 2016 Summer Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro, which is setting up to be a complete disaster in so many different ways. So we've already got the Zika scare that has frightened off a number of top flight athletes. We've also recently had the political upheaval and the economic upheaval to the point where apparently they can't afford to pay enough security people. So the security unions are basically telling people, yeah, you can come, but you probably won't be safe. And now we've got a super bacteria off the coast of Rio in the ocean, where, of course, there will be open swimming and rowing and other sorts of aquatic competitions. So, Jim, I guess if you're going to find out who's the best in the world, the super bacteria probably has a right to compete for that, but not at the time when we're trying to actually find something to be happy about and to celebrate the pinnacle of athletic achievement.
I'm really looking forward to the competitive immune systems competition, Greg. The idea, you know, look, it's, you know, we're all frustrated and sad and angry and befuddled this morning, but hey, at least we're not Olympic swimmers jumping into what we thought was merely raw sewage. But now we find out that it has raw sewage with a super bacteria in it that's resistant to antibiotics and things like that. Yay! I've been keeping an eye on this because I think there's two aspects of this year's Olympics that are really going to be fascinating besides the death toll. That is going to be one, just how bad they are, right? I'm, you know, Greg, we're old enough to remember when Atlanta was hosting it in 1996.
Yes.
With all kinds of claims about whether, you know, or questions about whether Atlanta was going to be ready, about whether they had everything, you know, and I remember the description being that, look, of course we'll be ready for the opening ceremony. It's just the paint will be drying. And, you know, but Atlanta, by and large, pulled it off. It was marred by the Centennial Park bombing late one night. But otherwise, by and large, Atlanta managed to succeed. It was the last time America hosted the Summer Olympics. They held the Winter Olympics in 2002 in Salt Lake City. The International Olympic Committee pretty clearly decided it did not want to continue on America and you know, the first world. There's a lot of anti-American sentiment going on over the last couple of years. So they were going to turn to the third world, and they were going to punish George W. Bush, and they would give the third world a chance to spotlight their rising stars, and they can host something like this. Well, guess what? Brazil can't host something like this. They promised like 7 years ago the water was going to be clean. And it didn't turn out. The infrastructure is falling down. As you mentioned, the security concerns. I think the best way to describe it, Greg, is that visitors to Rio, by feeling unsafe and being victimized by gangs and thieves and all these other criminals in Rio de Janeiro during these weeks, they'll get an authentic Brazilian experience. They'll really feel like the locals, I think. You have this. The infrastructure is falling down. You have concerns about Zika. They've refused to consider either rescheduling it or moving it or doing anything like that. Brazil has broken every conceivable promise it had about how ready it was going to be. This is what happens when you romanticize the third world, when you refuse to see things as they are and you believe in this happy narrative in your head and you don't want to look at evidence. And I think we're going to see the other fun question for the coming this coming August for me, Greg, is what does NBC do? Does NBC cover all this? Does it let us know all this? Or does it stick to what it clearly wants, which is this happy narrative of wonderful American athletes winning lots of gold medals? And look, we'd love to see a happy story of the Olympics, but a lot of things are going really wrong, just like they went really wrong at the Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. But by and large, Bob Costas chose to avert his pink eye from all the problems. And we saw, you know, the terrible, you know, ridiculous conditions and how the athletes' housing was thrown together and things were falling apart and there was no electricity and somebody died because the luge competition or one of the long track events. Things go really wrong in the Olympics. And it's what's kind of the International Olympics Committee seems to be getting worse and worse with this. So I'd love to see a giant rethinking of this, a full scale denunciation of the International Olympic Committee of being not merely ordinarily corrupt, but now too corrupt to do their jobs well. that it's now in a case where it's risking the lives of athletes because they don't want to see things as they are. It's a strange way. Maybe it's my own gleeful, joy in being proven right. But kind of a strange observation of just how bad things can get. There's going to be a perverse pleasure in watching these Olympics and seeing how accurately the people in charge can see the problems or whether they remain in denial. So that's my kind of cheery news for the day, other than the first 10 minutes of Comey's press conference.
A couple of thoughts here. First of all, it's if it goes as bad as some of us think it's going to go, it makes you wonder if we're even going to have Olympics going forward. But there's two potential positive silver linings here. We've established that we're not going to get a good president out of the next election. But you know what often comes out of super bacteria and sewage-filled oceans? We could get a superhero out of this, because that's a lot of times how they get created. And what better time?
Michael Phelps is Aquaman.
I've
always suspected you're never going to get Michael Phelps to test positive for steroids, but he might test positive for gills. Okay, nobody's that good that long.
And of course, you know where Obama wanted these Olympics to be was Chicago, which of course is enjoying a sterling reputation these days.
It's a fun question where, you know, Chicago's looking at Rio and saying, man, those folks have crime problems.
Well, Jim, it's good to have you back, and I'll be gone now for the next 6 days. So this is the month where Jim and I are hardly ever together due to vacations and conventions and that sort of thing. So we do still get along really well, just so you know. We'll be back for a couple of days next week and then after convention season as well. So, Jim, good luck holding down the fort, and I'll talk to you a little bit later next week.
Enjoy your break. See you next week, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday when Rich McFadden will be in for me. And Jim will also be here, of course, for the 3 Martini Lunch.